you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
Today I'm talking with Kate Weatherhead, actress, singer, writer, creator, author, funny as hell, Broadway.
What are these, a bunch of hashtags? What am I doing?
Nope. This is just a short list of the words that begin to describe Kate and how amazing and talented she is. We talk Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, her journey to the Broadway stage, and playing Neil Diamond. What? Seriously? Yep, you don't want to miss it. So listen up. Here we go.
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Can you hear that janky old air conditioner running? Is it going to...
No,
is it okay?
I mean, I hear it, but it's just a low hum and, you know...
Okay.
It's a podcast interview. Shit happens.
I would volunteer to turn it off, but...
Don't do it. That's not worth it.
I hate that.
What's going on in the city?
I have resumed work with my writing partner. He was out of town last week, so I've been spending a few hours every day FaceTiming with him and working on this writing project. So
you're familiar with this whole setup?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was FaceTiming for 3 hours this morning.
So oh, geez.
Like... I'm very comfortable in this situation.
The beauty of this, of talking to you this way, is that you have no idea that I just ate fish and that right now I probably reek of fish.
Hey. But,
yeah, so you're looking at me going, no, no way he smells like fish. Look at this guy.
No way.
Look at him. No way he smells like fish. But I probably do have a hint of salmon.
It's hard. I mean, if there's salmon... in the vicinity, it's hard not to have a hint of it somewhere.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Kate Weatherhead, where may we have seen you?
Okay. You may have seen me... I mean, I guess I'll go for the really obvious ones. You may have seen me in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel for about 2 seconds.
Yes.
I was, like, not even my parents... recognized me. Like, they were, I think, 5 episodes in, and they were like, didn't you do one of these? And I said, yeah. I go, oh, which one? I said, the 4th one. We already saw that.
I recognize you.
Well, thanks.
And I'm very envious that you did The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I love that show.
It's pretty good.
Show.
But the other place you may have seen me, if you are in a tiny sliver of the population, would be my web series, which is called Submissions Only. So that's one place you may have seen me. And then I guess if you're like a theater goer, you may have seen me in Legally Blonde the musical, lo these many years ago. but those are... And then... I will sort of add to this question. You may have heard me, because I've done a couple cast recordings. I'm just trying to think of, like, sort of like the top 4 or 5 things.
Sure.
Those who do know me from sort of these things. And so I would say if you've ever listened to the original cast recording of Ordinary Days, you may have heard me on that.
We're going to cover all the highlights of your career. Are they coming to get you, the cops?
Oh, yes, yeah. You know,
they're coming for you?
They found me. I thought I could hold them off till after this podcast, but nope.
What you've done is too horrible. First of all, let me just tell you, do you have any idea how much fun it was researching you? Do you have idea how much fun it was researching you? Oh my God, I had a ball. First of all, let me ask you, how are Christine and Arnold?
They're great.
Are they? Well, yeah. Christine and Arnold doing these days? Are they still up in Vermont?
They're still up in Vermont. Yeah. So Chris had knee replacement surgery in June, and it went very well. But,
excellent.
You know, if you've ever talked to anyone who's had knee replacement surgery, you know it's a long haul.
Right.
So it all went well, but the PT is pretty intense, and
sure.
it just takes a long time to feel good again. But she's doing
yes.
well.
And I love that your dad's name is Arnold. I mean, I don't know what, that's just the coolest name for a dad.
So few people are named Arnold. So yeah, it's pretty great. Why? Where did they show up? I'm so curious.
So many things I found about you online. Like, it was truly, it was like one of the most enjoyable experiences I've ever had, like searching online. Everything was so happy and enjoyable and pleasant. I mean, everybody listening, do yourself a favor and Google Kate Weatherhead and just click on any video link that you come across that Kate is in, because most likely she'll be singing, which is like this joyous experience to hear her sing, or she'll just be giving an interview of some sort, and you just seem like the nicest, sweetest person, which...
Oh, I just fool everybody.
Right. I know that you're
really not that nice.
No, I've met you. I know you're a horrible person, and that, you know, but you seem nice.
It's, I guess, all that's all that matters.
I mean, yeah. I sat there for the better part of the afternoon going from just one clip to the next and to another song, and it was just complete and utter joy. It really was. I mean, it's impossible to watch your stuff and be in a bad mood. So after
that's
I just...
That's nice.
You're welcome. But after that, I felt like I had to even things out, and I just, like, you know, went and punched a bird in the face.
Yeah,
I was like, you know, come on. I can't be that happy. Someone's going to get
that's
hurt.
That's right. Yeah.
Have you ever checked that's out? Good. Have you ever gone online and checked out some of your stuff?
Do I really have to answer that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay to say yes. Who's
I mean, yes. I would say I think when I was younger, I probably looked more frequently, and then sort of the bigger the internet monster became, and also, like, the more I realized the sort of collateral damage that comes with researching yourself, I've cut back significantly.
Okay.
I'd say, I mean, the other thing is I created something to live exclusively online. So
okay.
So when I was in the thick of that, of course, I was online all the time because it would have been irresponsible not to. You know, you got to check the numbers, you got to check the analytics and, you know, all of that stuff. Now that that's behind me, that I have fewer and fewer reasons to go. Now, I will say this. So, like, with the example of Ordinary Days, you know, I'm still very close with the writer of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so occasionally he'll say, look, I'm doing a concert, and would you mind singing that song, you know, one of the songs?
Sure.
And so in order to prepare for it and sort of like remind myself of the lyrics and the tempo, it feels weird, but I sort of rehearse with myself.
That makes total sense to me.
So in that case, I'll go look. But I don't do a lot of deep dives anymore.
No, well, I just didn't know if you were aware. Like, some of the videos of you on YouTube have, like, tens of thousands of views. I don't know if you were aware of that. So if you're having a bad day, or you're having a low self-esteem day, or, you know, you want to punch a bird in the face day, just go to YouTube, type in your name, click on any video. Don't watch the video. Scroll down
just
to the comments. Scroll down to the comments. It's like a Christmas list of compliments. People love you.
That's really nice.
There are a few,
that's nice.
There are a few prison marriage proposals.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just saying.
I'll consider them. Well, since
options.
I'm about to get carted off.
That's right. You're going to get to meet them
face to
face.
Maybe they'll be able to do it in person.
Right. And also, I mean, here's another question. Who are Larry and Nell, and why the hell do they get a Playbill shout-out?
Wow. Playbill shout-out? Which Playbill?
It's like, it is amazing what you can find about someone on the internet. Your bio in the playbill for Legally Blonde. And it was like, I want to thank Larry and Nell or whoever.
That makes all the sense in the world. So Larry O'Keefe and Nell Benjamin wrote the score.
Ah.
And I had done, the whole reason I wound up in Legally Blonde is because I had done two shows with them prior to that experience.
Yes.
So I did, we had become friends and colleagues. Were it not for them writing that show, I find it very unlikely that I would have been in that show. So they were instrumental to me being involved in that. I mean, they went so far as to name one of the sorority girls Kate, I think, as like...
There you go. Wow.
Like messaging to the creative team, like...
Huh.
We'd like her to be part of this.
See, going back to people love you. That's an amazing, amazing thing. How did this relationship get established to begin with? I know you said you did other shows, but I mean, I've done shows with people, and it's like,
right,
good job. See you later.
Well, I would say like the first 10 years of my career can mostly be traced back to one source, which is TheaterWorks USA, which for your listeners who do not know, TheaterWorks USA is maybe the oldest children's theater company in the country. And they do mostly touring shows, six actors in a van. The other van has all the sets. It's like really scrappy, but quality material, because they get professional writers to write these shows and professional directors, and it's also a really great way to get your equity card.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was starting out, I should say I'm a petite individual. I have a small face and small head, and I have, you know, certainly at age, 22, 23, I looked very young. And so that was really helpful in gaining, younger roles or animals. Like, those were the sort of categories that I naturally fell into. It was like, do you need a teenager? Great. Kate can do that. Like, and, so TheaterWorks was sort of this natural fit for a young actor starting out, particularly if you looked and sounded like me. So the way I got my equity card the way I got my equity card is by doing a Christmas Carol for them.
Mm.
They're touring Christmas Carol. And then... I swear to God, we're going to get to Larry and Nell in just a second. I did it 2 years in a row, and then shortly after my second time doing it, my representation called with an audition for a mini tour of one of their new shows that they were developing, called Sarah Plain Atoll, which was based on the children's book Sarah mm-hmm. Plain Atoll. And a mini tour was like a 4-week thing where you just do maybe like 7 shows are in and around New York City to basically test out this new entity. And the writers of Sarah Plain Atoll were Larry O'Keefe, who wrote the score, Nell Benjamin, who wrote the lyrics, and Julia Jordan, who wrote the book. And Joe Calarco was the director. And all of them at that time were like up and coming. Larry had recently had a lot of success with Bat Boy off Broadway.
Oh, right.
Joe Calarco had gotten a lot of attention for R&J, which was this like 4-person mm-hmm. Romeo and Juliet,
right.
But it was like schoolboys. Anyway, so they were like, they had some newfound street cred. And so I just remember going in and being like, wow, this is kind of a crackerjack team for a kids' show. And I went in and I got cast for this mini tour. And then I learned that it was slated for their free summer theater a slot, which every summer they get to do a show at the Lucille Lortel Theater in the Village.
Okay.
And Sarah Plain Atoll had been chosen for that. And so that's how I made my off-Broadway debut. It was in that show, but it was a beautiful show, a really special show, and that team was one that I made lasting friendships with, and ended up doing shows with all of them again many times over. Like, so I ended up doing another show, theater work show with Julia, another theater work show with Larry Nell, which was the show I met my husband on. So it was just, it really was like this root ball of a show,
right,
that sprouted many branches after that.
Yeah. So how old were you when this all started to happen for you? Well, you're talking about, you're like doing your first off-Broadway show, and how long were you in New York before that started happening?
Yeah, I'm 27 now, so I was about 3 years old.
Right, you're 3 years old.
When this happened.
You got married when you were 6. That's why the cops are coming.
Yeah. no, let's see. This all started... Well, I moved here to go to theater school, so I guess 20... Sorry, my math is terrible. When did I actually start working?
That's why you went to theater school and not regular school.
2000. I started working in 2000. That was when I got the first... Christmas Carol. So I was 24, because I'm going to be 43 in about...
Oh, my goodness.
5 minutes.
In about 5 minutes? Okay. Yeah. We better hurry up.
No, seriously, my birthday's September 10th, so in about 5 minutes, I'm going to be 43.
Yeah, you are. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, so everybody, in case you don't know, I am talking to my very good friend, Kate Weatherhead. You may have seen her, and I'm going to run down the whole list. You may have seen her in The Big C with Laura Linney as... Moose Girl. I love that character name. Talk to me about Moose Girl. I didn't see the episode, but what did you do as Moose Girl?
Very, very little. it was a scene in which, two of the series regulars are having dinner, and they're friends, and one of them tucks into her dessert and finds a ring in her chocolate mousse, and rather than immediately try to determine who this ring is actually for, her friend launches into this sort of mock proposal to amuse her, until a gentleman comes along and like taps him on the shoulder and is like, "That's my ring. I was going to propose to my girlfriend." Points. Guess who the girlfriend is? It's me. And I had the unforgettable line, "Oh, Eric."
And you spiked it straight into the ground, nailed it.
Oh, nailed it. Yeah.
Buried it deep.
Oh, Eric. what's funny, though, is I thought, oh, my God, this is like the teeny tiniest little part.
Right.
But when the episode aired, the way they cut it, they just like kept cutting to me. So it actually, for someone who had one line, I was like all over that scene.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Know.
Was the little things, guys.
was that your first TV gig?
I think it was. I mean, I had at that point, I had been, I think we had done 1.5 seasons of Submissions Only, so I wasn't unfamiliar with the art form.
Of course.
But in terms of, like, on the who cares a meter, yes, The Big C was the first on camera thing.
And as Kate said, you may have also seen her in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in season 1, episode 4 as Polly. I recognized her. I think you can recognize her. You were in Legally Blonde, the musical, the TV movie, which you also did on Broadway.
Yes.
You may have seen her on Broadway in Legally Blonde, the musical, and the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Yes.
Yes, that's right.
Your first Broadway show. You are the writer, director, producer, creator, and star of the 22-episode web series Submissions Only. Can we find that anywhere? Can you still find that online?
Yes. So there's a streaming platform called Stage, and that is currently where Submissions Only lives. Okay. And unlike YouTube, you do have to pay for a subscription, but I believe it's only like $4.99 a month, so you know, I don't want to push anybody too hard, but I think, you know.
Well, let me just say
there are at least 22 good episodes of something.
There are 22 good episodes, and if you are in this business, in this industry, or enjoy stories about actors, acting, theater, all of the above, then I think it's worth the $4.99. You should definitely go check it out. You were nominated for a Drama Desk Award for your performance in The Other Josh Cohen. That's pretty amazing, right? That's a pretty big deal.
It's amazing in that that show had such a short run. So it's kind of a miracle that enough people saw it to even like register on anyone's radar. That's what was really remarkable, is that just how unexpected that was, because we ran in the fall of 2012, Hurricane Sandy happened smack dab in the middle of it, and basically wiped out a week's worth of performances. And then I think we had 1 week left, and that was that.
Wow.
And so cut to, you know, this was like mid-November that it closed. So cut to whenever those nominations came out, several months later, didn't know the nominations were coming out, certainly was not expecting to be recognized. And then I remember I was in the hallway just outside my apartment. My phone started to go crazy. But of course, like, not just like, congratulations. And I'm thinking, right, like, for what? And I remember calling my husband being like, I think maybe I was nominated for something. I don't know. Come to find out, mine was one of six nominations that the show got. So, I mean, the Drama Desk sort of traditionally pick this, like, dark horse every year. Like, they'll kind of include the usual suspects. And then there's always the show that no one's heard of. And that year, it was our show.
That's
like
awesome.
Everyone was like, what the hell is The Other
that
Josh Cohen?
That is great. I mean, and that's a show where you played over a dozen different characters, including Neil Diamond.
Including Neil Diamond.
That's pretty amazing. So was it just like one just giant constant costume change?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How much,
pretty much,
fun was that?
More fun than I've had in just about anything.
Did you feel like you were living in an episode of Bugs Bunny?
I mean, to be honest, I think I always feel like I'm living in an episode of Bugs Bunny, so I'm not even kidding.
That's great.
Lucky
you.
So, you know, yes, this was like a heightened version of that. What's wonderful is that, you know, that I got to do it two more times. We did it a couple of years later at Paper Mill Playhouse. And then we just did it again in New York off-Broadway last fall. We got, like, new producers came on board, and they had a nice little run.
Amazing.
In Midtown, and a lot more people got to see it this time.
That's awesome.
So me and Neil Diamond, we've had a really special run.
I think that would be the highlight for me, to see you as Neil Diamond. I would love to see what your interpretation
would be. It's
unlikely.
It's an unlikely pairing.
Yeah. I mean, because you look so much alike. You sound so much alike.
Yeah. Totally.
Totally.
Yeah.
You're also off-Broadway in a play called Clever Little Lies with Marlo Thomas, with that girl.
Yes. Yes. Also a show that I did a number of times. So we premiered that at George Street Theater in New Brunswick, New Jersey in 2013. And then we did a short run out in the Hamptons in the summer of 2014. And then a year later, we got the green light to do an off-Broadway run. So, yep, there was that. And that was, I mean, look, Marla's great, and she was so good in the show. And it was it was a great experience. And it was really cool to be in a show that attracted people like Alan Alda, you know?
Right.
You know, you just never knew who was going to show up that night, because she knows everybody.
Sure, of course.
You know, she's like best friends with Gloria Steinem and Elaine May.
Oh my
so
God.
I, you know, the star meter was high.
That's got to be a pretty cool experience.
Yeah.
It's got to be a pretty cool experience for a little girl from Vermont. Right?
Ah, gee, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
You're married to a Tony Award winning lighting designer, Jeff Kreuter.
Your listeners won't see it, but I'll show it to you.
I'll attest. I will vouch.
So you can say,
oh my goodness!
Look at that.
Tony Award for what?
Everything.
It does spin, and it's much heavier than it looks. Isn't that what people always say?
Oh, so heavy!
What show was that for?
It was for Peter and the Starcatcher.
Oh yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So,
which was wonderful.
So let me ask you, so does he ever use his Tony Award to like end a discussion or win an argument? Is he ever just like, oh yeah, that's what you think? Boom! Tony Award.
I would say I use it more than he does. I used it today because His laptop is broken. And when I say broken, I mean physically. Like, the screen hinges
yes.
are broken, so it keeps flop. He has to prop up the screen part. And I said just this morning, I said, you have a Tony. Get a new computer.
Oh, so does he use the Tony? Does he use the Tony to hold the back up in the back? Oh, yeah,
he
I
could.
Have a Tony. I could just rest it up against the back.
He was using a pillow at the time. No, but I know he's very proud of it, of course, and mm-hmm. proud of the work he did. But the fact that it is on display in our apartment
yes.
is my doing. Like, if it were up to him, I think he would, like, tuck it away.
Sure.
You know, he's a little shy about it being so visible. And I'm like, are you nuts?
Are you
like,
yeah, no joke.
We're putting the Tony out.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, you know, if I win a Tony, maybe I'll suddenly relate. But until that moment, I'm just going to flaunt his.
That a girl. And you're also the writer of a book series, Jack and Louisa.
No.
Co-writer of a book series.
Yeah, it's true.
Tell me about Jack and Louisa. And where can people find it?
Well, you can find it on Amazon. It's a 3-book series. The targeted age range is 8 to 11. But if you, if you consider yourself a theater nerd, then I think whatever age you are... Well, it doesn't matter. You can find something to enjoy in it.
Right.
It came about because this young woman was working as an associate editor at Grosset and Dunlap, which is a template of Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a template imprint.
I don't know.
Sorry.
I'm going to take your word for it.
It's, yeah.
Whatever you say, it's true.
Imprint.
Imprint.
Template. And, she was a fan of submissions only and a theater nerd in her own right. Like, she had moved to the city to pursue it and then wound up working in publishing. So she had this idea to develop a book series about theater kids. And then one day she thought, like, I wonder if those submissions only people would be interested in this. And so she reached out. She still had a connection in the theater world, a casting director. So she got my email from him, and I'll never forget that first email. I was like, is this a joke? Like, is someone actually asking me if I want to write a book series? What's happening? But sure enough, it was true, and we took a meeting with her and her editor and publisher, and they were all so lovely, and they pitched this idea of, like, a girl and a boy in middle school who do theater together and beyond that. Oh, and they said, and we thought, you know, Kate, you could write the chapters from the girl's perspective, and Andrew, you write the chapters from the boy's perspective. Beyond that, it's kind of up to you. The first step that we took was to just kind of swap stories from our own childhoods, like, what was your experience like as a kid doing theater? And then the story really, like, came out of those conversations, because I was, you know, in Vermont doing after school programs, school plays, like, very normal stuff that a kid interested in theater would do.
Right.
And then Andrew was working on Broadway and on national tours and, like, was a real professional show kid, you know, socking money away for his college education because he was, like, doing 8 shows a week. And so we were like, well, that's a really fun place to start. Oh, and he also had this real life experience of getting fired from a show because he started to go through puberty and his voice changed.
Wow.
Which is a real thing.
Of
I mean,
course
it happens
it is. Wow.
constantly.
I would not have thought about that.
These kids are constantly outgrowing their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, that's a super unique, like, very specific coming of age experience. And it would be fun to depict that. So we were like, what if a 12-year-old Andrew met a 12-year-old Kate in present day?
Right.
And so we set it in the Midwest and had it that this kid, Jack, has just been fired
mm-hmm.
from a big deal show. Like, he was going to be the star, and this boy starts to change. And so his parents decide to give him a more, quote, you know, normal
mm-hmm.
life for a few years. And they happen to move in two doors down from this girl, Louisa, who's, like, musical theater obsessed and freaks out when this kid moves in next door.
Right.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. So I'm assuming by this point you have realized what submissions only has done for you in the bigger picture then?
Well, I think I'm still figuring... I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I continue to figure that out.
Because when you and I talked the other day, you had said, you know, we were talking about submissions only, and you said, I thought, maybe I'll get a sitcom out of it.
Yeah. And yeah, I did. I mean, I didn't get a sitcom, but I did think that.
Right.
And that was sort of the... It felt like a means to that end,
right,
initially, of like, I'm trying to get the industry to understand me in a certain way. I know, I'll spoon feed it to them.
Sure.
And it, in a way, it seemed to do like everything but that. Like, I didn't
right.
come close to getting a pilot, but like, I got a book series, and then I, you know, a few years later, ended up teaching web series writing.
Oh my god!
Like all these things that, like all these things that I could not have possibly imagined for myself.
Right.
You know, people being like, "Would you ever want to write a musical? Would you ever want to like all these things?" That I'm like, I just thought maybe I'd get more auditions.
So, I would imagine then that the takeaway for people who are listening, because you have created a lot of your own work. And I don't know if that mm-hmm. was your intention from the beginning, but to me, it seems like the takeaway would be, you never know what the hell is going to happen. And as long as you remain open to the possibilities, who's to say
yeah.
where it could go for you? Things could show up in ways, like you were saying, that they could show up in, wrapped in presents that you were not expecting to get.
Correct. Yes, that's absolutely true. You really never know. And I mean, I think it makes perfect sense to say stay open to it, but I don't, it's hard for me to create a link between like, and because I was open to anything is why all this happened. Like a lot of it really kind of ambushed me.
Hmm.
What I would say more is that in terms of like creating your own stuff, what I think helped keep the pathways open for more opportunities was the authenticity of the thing we did to begin with. So by creating something that felt true to us and made sense to us and tickled our funny bone,
mm-hmm.
that's, I think, what opened the doors for the other things, if that makes sense. Because we weren't setting out to, like, create a successful web series.
Mm-hmm.
We were creating something that we thought would, like I said, like lead to more,
right.
you know, opportunities as actors. And then, but the way we got there was to make something that just was amusing to us.
Absolutely.
And then inadvertently, it was amusing to a lot of other people.
Right.
People that we could not have anticipated.
Exactly. Exactly.
Amusing.
I find that tends to be the case more often than not when you're creating your own stuff. Did you stop submissions only because you ran out of money? It became too big of a job? It was not going, it was not taking off the way that you had hoped? Or, I mean, what made you guys finally go, okay, I think we've ridden this as far as we can go?
I think we'd gotten to a point where the prospect of producing and financing it ourselves became too daunting. We did it for 3 seasons, and I think we had reached a point where we were just tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were very proud of and satisfied with the product, but the thought of getting back on, you know, Kickstarter or Indiegogo
right.
and saying, "Hey, everybody, it's us again."
Right. Right.
We're looking to raise twice as much this time
right.
because it's got to be twice as good.
Sure.
I think we were also hoping that at that point, 3 seasons in, perhaps someone would come along
right.
and take it off our hands. Not take it off our hands, but, you know,
yes.
help with the development and enhancement of it on a much larger scale. So there was there felt like we created some space
mm-hmm.
to allow for that to happen.
Right.
And then it didn't happen.
Were you able to end it in a way that you were happy with?
Yes.
Sort of tie everything together?
Yeah. When I was writing the 3rd season, I thought, just in case, like,
mm-hmm.
just in case
sure.
this is it.
Because
it just might be. I want to make sure that our fans are happy. So I feel like we did it in a way that leaves room for more, mm-hmm. should we like ever pick up again, but, you know, satisfies that, like, are Aaron and Penny going to get together?
Right.
You know, what's going to, oh, I
right.
don't mean to spoil anything, but,
for all the people who are going to rush to it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh, who are
yep.
you trying to?
Yes.
More with Kate Weatherhead in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are so many great podcasts on the network, and they're adding new ones all the time, showcasing great stories by great people and shining a spotlight on the Queen City. You can find them all at queencitypodcastnetwork.com. As always, I try to shout out even a few of the many amazing actors out there busting their butts to keep a career going in this ridiculous business. So, I thought I'd stay connected to today's guest and shout out her castmates from the off-Broadway musical Ordinary Days by Adam Gwan. Along with Kate, it starred Hunter Foster, whom you may have seen in the HBO series Boardwalk Empire and the ABC family series Bunheads. Love that name. Lisa Brescia. I hope I'm saying that right. I apologize, Lisa, if I'm not. You may have seen her on Person of Interest and Law & Order Criminal Intent. And Adam Gertner. You may have seen this guy in a bunch of stuff, like How I Met Your Mother, Two Broke Girls, and Supernatural. Here's a little clip of Kate singing I Don't Want to Be Here from Ordinary Days. Hope you enjoy it.
I finally got a job at some humdrum office, like everyone right out of school does. I sat there at my cubicle every day, sending faxes, and that's what my life was. Oh, I went back home and said to my parents, I know what I've got to do. And since I am a dork, I moved to New York. And I started grad school. I really don't want to be here.
So you were a theater-obsessed kid from the start, right? From the
yeah,
get-go.
I saw my parents dragged me to a community theater production of West Side Story. I remember I was in the kitchen and my mom was like, we're seeing a play tonight. It's like Romeo and Juliet, but with music. And I must have like scrunched up my face and she was like, oh no, it's beautiful. And she started to sing Maria and I was like, stop. Oh, mom, stop. And then of course we went and I was like seconds away from leaping out of my chair and running down the aisle and joining them on stage. And that was pretty much it. That was not the first show I ever saw, but mm-hmm. I think it was the first show I saw where I understood just what was happening. Because I think up until that point, my youth was still sort of confused about, is that Peter Pan? The West Side Story, I was like, those are actors
right.
pretending to do a thing.
Yes.
Which means I could pretend to do a thing.
Of course. Of course. So was it ever an option for you to do anything else? I mean, was there ever a chance you were going to be an accountant or a dental hygienist?
Never an accountant, but I grew up thinking I was going to be an actor and a writer because mm-hmm. I wrote a lot. I wrote a lot of stories and I like won contests. And so forever I was like, I'm going to be an actress and a writer. And then high school, college, I was like, I'm going to be an actor.
Yep.
Like that's what I want to do. The writing isn't like, it's not as fun as it used to be.
Right.
And so I threw myself, but no, there was never like, maybe I'll be a psychologist or.
Right. There was no,
nothing,
there was
nothing
never really
like
a fallback
that.
Plan.
No, not really. The fallback plan was like, well, I was a good student, so mm-hmm. I'll be able to fake something.
Right.
No, there was no like, and then I'll be a doctor.
So where did you go to school?
I went to Wesleyan University for college.
And then you went straight
yeah.
straight to New York after that?
Straight to New York into Circle in the Square Theater School for 2 years.
How was it different? How did it end up being different from what you anticipated it being? Like looking at it now.
Theater
from,
school?
No, just your whole, I'm going to Broadway. I'm going to New York. I'm going to do this.
I mean, my ego was robust when I arrived and I really thought like I will get the training I need and then I will get my first Broadway show.
The next day?
Because pretty much the next day. Like, I was... So it definitely went a little differently because I also, like, it took me... And now it's, like, so screamingly obvious. But at the time, I really thought, like, the fact that I was talented, period, would give me this like, pass into every and all opportunities. Like,
up to the front of the line.
Being right for something was... something I really had to learn the hard way.
Sure.
Which, again, I look back on that and I go, God, you're such an idiot. Like, that really never occurred to you. But I did. I was like, but I can do it. Like, why couldn't I?
Of course.
Be Maggie and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Like, why not?
Right. So
now I'm like, because just no. Like, because you can't. So, sort of figuring out how to... I don't even want to say market myself because mm-hmm. I'm still like, what does that mean? But
right.
just understanding what was kind of what my, I hate these words, but like what my brand was, what my image was.
Yes.
And certainly, like I said, the first 10 years, it was all about being like teenagers mm-hmm. who ranged from like sassy and sarcastic to like extremely vulnerable. And like, sort of that was my
right.
thing.
Right.
Like, hard-edged, but it's only because she was shielding enormous pain. Like, that was, like, those were the roles that I kept
right.
getting,
right.
you know?
Like, well, I mean, because they don't teach you those things when you're first doing theater, especially in children's theater. They don't teach you about, okay, so you want to do this and make money doing it? Here's that animal. Nobody teaches you about the business side of it, that whole marketing side, because then it becomes it becomes a completely different thing.
It is a completely different thing. I mean...
That takes a lot of the fun out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the theater school is just like... It's like athletic training,
mm-hmm.
but they don't... At least my experience, there wasn't a lot of, like, business savvy that was communicated or shared.
Right.
And to some extent, I understand it. I understand why. Because, first of all, that's not the expertise of the trainer, of the teachers. And also, you can only break down the business so much. You know, ultimately, it is timing and luck. And were you just, did you come in right after lunch when everyone's feeling better because their blood sugar levels are
sure.
high? Like, it's, I'm not kidding, you know? Like,
no,
it's not,
of course.
Like,
you're absolutely
there are all
right.
these things that are completely out of your control, and you can tell a kid that all day long, and it doesn't sink in until it's happened over and over and over again. Like,
right.
We would have guest speakers come, and they would talk about their struggle and how hard it was, and they weren't, you know... It wasn't until they were 37 that they got their first big break. And I just sat there nodding and going, well, that's not going to be me.
Right. Sure. You must have done it right.
I just was so... Or just like, that's your story. Mine's going to be
mm-hmm.
much more dazzling. But thank you so much for coming. I mean, like, it just takes doing it, being in it, living it, getting knocked down, having your ego in, you know, forced in check.
Right.
And kind of like always assessing where and how you are when you get back, when like after you've been knocked down, when you get back up, going, okay, what I learned from that.
Right. Because I'm going to attest, again, for those people who are not familiar with you, and again, I'm only so familiar with you. You're pretty fucking talented. You know, you sing like crazy. I'm assuming you can dance. I've never seen that. You're funny as hell. You're a phenomenal actress. And with all that, you've still had to struggle and go through these experiences. That it's not that having a very high level of talent isn't always, it's not always a sure thing. It's not always
no
guarantees for anything. And you ended up on Broadway. You made it. You got there.
I did. Yeah.
Talk to me about that experience. How long were you there before Spelling Bee?
Oh, like in New York before?
Yeah.
Again, I look back and I think, you know, when it happened, I was like, oh, finally. And now I look back, I go, it only took me 5 years. That's really not that bad.
Wow.
like so many things in my career, it's just like this very strange, scrappy little story. But I had worked with a man named Vadim Feichner, who's a musical director, on a show, the show where I met my husband, the show that Larry and Nell wrote, was called Cam Jansen and the Curse of the Emerald Elephant. It was a theater work show. It was very funny. Mm-hmm. And Vadim was our MD, and during that process, he said, I've been working on this show called Spelling Bee, and I feel like you'd be really good in it. And he introduced me to Bill Finn, who wrote the score of the show, through a concert. So Bill would do these concerts of his music, and Vadim would sort of supply backup singers for the more renowned names that were in the lineup. And so it was clever, you know, it was smart of him to kind of put me in front of this guy that way. And so when auditions for the Summerstock production of it rolled around, because that's where it started, at Barrington Stage in Massachusetts. So by the time those rolled around, I got a call to go in. And when I went in, I already knew Bill. And I didn't get it, but I guess I came close, because a few months later, it had already been selected to be part of Second Stage's season, so it was going to get an off-Broadway run, and they had hired a new director, and that new director was James Lapine.
Oh, sure.
And James, once he came on board, wanted to do like a week-long reading of it to, I think, acquaint himself with the show and become part of the development process. Well, Celia Keenan-Bolger, who is the sister of Andrew Keenan-Bolger, who is my writing partner, but none of that, like, Andrew, I think, was still in high school when all of this was happening, so I didn't know him yet. But Celia was playing the part that I had gone in for, and she was unavailable because she was doing a regional theater on the West Coast, regional job on the West Coast. Chris Burney from Second Stage called and said, Vadim and Bill recommended you. We're doing this reading, and James would like to meet you. He may have you sing. I mean, he made it sound so casual. It was so not casual. It was one of the more, like, terrifying things that I did, and I did poorly. I can say that, and I have confirmation. I went in. I was very scared. I did very poorly. They were like, thank you so much. And I remember calling Vadim, like leaving a voicemail, being like, well, thanks for your encouragement. Mm-hmm. I doubt I'll be joining you next week. It was very scary and I did terribly, but anyway, bye.
Yeah.
And the next day I got a call from Chris Burney again saying, hi, Kate, we're just like working out a few things. We'll like get back to you in a couple hours. And I'm thinking, just say,
thanks.
Hasta la vista.
Thanks.
Like,
right.
I know I sucked. It's fine. Just, like, let's let this go. Mm-hmm. And then a couple hours later, he called and he was like, we'd love to have you join us. And I was like, what happened? And I'm thinking, because Bill wasn't there when I went in. Neither was Vadim. And I'm thinking James was like, she was terrible. And they were like, no, she really isn't terrible.
Trust us.
She'll be fine. Right. And he probably was like, okay, whatever. The reason I'm pretty sure I'm right is that once I found out I was doing it, I was like, okay, well, now I gotta be great.
Right.
And so I made sure to, like, really be on it, really learn my music well, so that by the time we did the presentation, I redeemed myself. And sure enough, a few minutes before the presentation, I had a question for James about some technical little, like, should I look at this person or this person?
Yep.
You know, something like that. He answers the question. He's like, thanks again so much for joining us this week. I mean, you've done just such a great work. I went, oh, thank you so much. He said, much better than your audition. And I kind of laughed. I was like, oh, yeah, I know. And then he stopped me with a look. And he went, no, you got to work on it. And then he said, No, that was the last thing he said. But prior to that, he said, we got to find a way to keep you involved. So I was like, well, maybe. So then a couple months later, I get a call. This is an unofficial offer to understudy Spelling Bee off-Broadway. You'll probably be getting the official offer tomorrow.
Okay.
So this is now like November. Well, tomorrow came and went.
Yep.
Cut to 2 weeks later.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I call my agent. I'm like, what is going on? And he's like, I'm sorry to say they've rescinded it because they wanted to have four understudies. They can only have to, and it was a matter of, you know, that the play, there's a lot of diversity in it. And the consolation prize was, but if we move to Broadway, you're the first person we'll call. And I'm thinking, that's not helpful. I'm unemployed, and I was really excited about this job.
Sure.
And there's no guarantee, and okay, thanks for nothing, really. And then a few months later, I see in the Times, it's been announced, it's moving to Broadway, my phone's not ringing, I'm thinking, man, oh, God, like, if only. And then a few weeks later, I got a phone call from the general manager and offered me the job.
Unbelievable. And then did you bounce off of every wall that you were standing next to? And
oh, yeah. Like, I got off the phone. I called my mom. I burst into tears. You know, the whole thing. I think, and I was dating Jeff, my husband, now husband, at that time. And he was out of town. I mean, it was just like phone screaming. I was working in a restaurant.
Of course.
And I was able to, like, go in that night and be like, you got me for 3 more weeks.
Right, right.
I'm out of here.
That is fantastic. And,
yeah.
And then tell me about that first moment on the Broadway stage. Come on.
You had to
have encapsulated that somewhere in the memory banks. Remember this moment.
I did, and I was fortunate in that I knew when my first, because I was an understudy,
right.
So I was fortunate in that my first time was planned. It wasn't like,
right.
Sarah's sick, you're on.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I knew that she was going away for a wedding, and so I had lots of time to prepare myself and invite people. So I had, you know, I had like my cheering squad.
That's awesome.
And I got to do 2 shows in one day, which was great.
Nice.
But, and I had been, you know, we'd been rehearsing on the stage, but you don't rehearse in light and you don't rehearse with the band. So for me, it's funny, I mean, I'd been on stage plenty of times.
Of course.
In light with orchestras, but not this one.
Yep.
And that's what was like so disorienting was the look and sound of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where, because they've got monitors, everywhere. So just start getting accustomed to like the soundscape of the show. It was thrilling. It was thrilling and meaningful. And my family was there, and you know, it was great. It was great, and it felt like such a milestone. You know, it felt like, yeah, this is what I've been dreaming about for so long. Mm-hmm. I'm very nervous, but this is what I want.
And it's, well, I mean, because, you know, of course, there's always the flip side of it of, you know, be careful what you wish for. And it's fantastic that it worked out in a way where you're like, no, this, oh, okay.
No.
She gave me the pause finger. Go ahead.
You asked how my experience was that first time on the Writer's stage. The experience of being in the show as a job was layered, nuanced. Being an understudy is not for the faint of heart.
Right.
It is psychologically challenging. It feels counterintuitive.
Hmm.
You know, we're performers, and so to do all the work to learn something to then not do it feels weird.
Right.
It took a long time to feel like we were truly part of the company. It was a very celebrated show and a very celebrated ensemble. We really did, the four of us really did feel like bench warmers for quite a while.
Right.
And so it took time for, you know, the cast to feel comfortable enough to start taking more time off and go on vacation and all this stuff. And once that starts to happen, then there's like a steady rotation of somebody's always on. It was,
right.
You know,
right.
And then you really start to feel like you're part of the team, and the cast isn't looking at you sideways because they've never seen you on stage before.
Of course.
You know, like, oh, yeah,
sure.
Great, you're this tonight.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right.
But that takes time, and and this is just my own personal experience. Like, everyone who's understudied will give you their own story, but most people will tell you that it's a tough gig. Like, it's just a tough gig. So even by the time our involvement felt normalized, there were a couple scars. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's hard to avoid. So there was a little bit of be careful what you wish for, because I'd achieved my lifelong dream. I was making more money than I'd ever made in my life.
Mm-hmm.
there was so much to be excited about and thankful for. And yet there were also nights where, like, I was so anxious or doubting, insecure, you know, all that stuff.
Yes. But then Legally Blonde came along, and you were not an understudy.
Yeah, I was not an understudy.
Main cast.
Yeah. And it really felt different. And it felt, I was like, yeah, I think this is what it's supposed to be like. This feels like a lot better. I'm supposed to be here all the time. These...
Is there any truth, I guess, to the mindset or the idea in New York City that if you're a musical theater actress, then you're a musical theater actress and we don't see you for film and TV, and vice versa? If, you know, it's hard to be seen for straight plays, or if you only do TV, we don't consider you for theater because you don't, you're a TV guy. I mean, is there truth to that? And do you feel that you've fallen victim to that in some way? Go.
I'm sure I have. I'm sure there's truth to all of it. I think representation has a lot to do with it.
Of course.
The bigger agencies get the first slots. There are truths to just how these things shake down. There's also, and this continues to be my, I think, one of my own, I don't even know what to call it. It's not like a problem, but sort of a pattern of behavior of mine is that I get antsy and want to do lots of different things. And I think, like anything, if I had thrown myself and my attention towards any one thing, I may have been more successful. Like, there are certain actors out there who are like, I'm not leaving town for a year. I'm going to stay here because I really want to develop my film and TV resume.
Sure.
And if that means sitting around more and waiting for these things, then so be it.
Right.
I will find other ways to make money. I will find other ways. And for me, I'm like, ooh, that doesn't feel... I just don't have the patience for it.
Sure.
And if you're offering me $675 to go away for 2 months to do a play that sounds fun, like, I'm going to do that.
Great.
And it does not at all, like, pave the way for a successful film and TV career. Not at all. But I'm like... That's right in front of me. It's bright and shiny. It's, you know, it's directed by this great person. You know, I'll come up with these sort of immediate reasons to do something rather than play the long game with any one thing. So I take some responsibility, and then there's just will always be things beyond my control.
Because you don't feel slighted in some way that you've missed out on one of the biggest New York City actors' rites of passage? You have not been on Law & Order? After all these years, you don't feel slighted?
I don't feel slighted about that. I mean, look, if I want to feel slighted, it takes about 5 minutes to backslide into that rabbit hole. But, but you know, I just try not, it's not healthy. But there's all kinds of things where I can go, how come? Why not me? Why wasn't that easier? What is the point? What's it gonna do?
I don't think there is any point. I think that you have had a pretty amazing career up to this point, and I don't see any signs of you stopping anytime soon. And by the list of comments and compliments of the people who have watched you, worked with you, who continue to want to work with you, I don't really see that slowing down. So I see this being, I don't know, insanely successful for you. Wouldn't you agree? How would you assess it at this point?
I think it's been pretty good. I do sort of marvel at the twists and turns that it's taken, either by my own hand or someone else's. But no, I won't sit here and try to convince you that it's been bad or gone wrong, because it hasn't. It's just, it continues to take me by surprise. And I continue to take myself by surprise, just in terms of like what I find myself gravitating towards, or what new things, you know, bring me joy or fulfillment. That, like, just 5 years ago I would have been like, really, that's what's gonna get me off? Okay, cool.
Okay.
So yeah, but no, I'm pleased.
I think you should be.
I'm pleased.
I think you should be. It's been really, really you know, impressive to just watch and see all the things that you've done and created and continue to create. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and talk with me. It's been so great to see you again and catch up with you and to learn and find out even more about you. So I wish you, of course, as you know, nothing but continued success and happiness in the road along the way. And I hope that you and I get the chance to play together someday. I hope that that certainly happens. Yeah. This has been Kate Weatherhead. You've been listening to You May Have Seen. Thank you so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.